Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Well, welcome everybody. Good morning. I'm Greg Meyer. It's glad to have you here as Jacob's Well today, and we've got just a great day, so there's some important stuff to get involved with, and I just got to reinforce that song. We just all got to keep on keeping on, and we're going to talk a little bit about how that happens and how we do it together, so that's going to be great. Last week, so we just did 5 weeks about This Is Your Life, trying to kind of get our own, a better grasp of who we are, who we're called to be, what we can be, how we do it, and I finished last week talking about this, and I made this statement, because this is an important commitment that I have personally, and that it is, and this is it, it's always the right time to do the right thing for the right reason. I really, really believe that, and I hope you do too. It's always the right time to do the right thing for the right reason. Now, there's a catch in that, and I talked a little bit about it, but I kind of hedged it last week, and that is, okay, I agree, but like, how do I know the right thing? And that is the catch, isn't it? I mean, that's really, really hard. And there's no formula to that. There's no easy answer we can give you. But at the same time, there's stuff that we can learn about this. There's stuff that helps us with those decisions and maybe frees us up from always just having to make the right decision. And so that's something I want to talk about today. And along with me, we've got Nick Tassler. I mean, you guys, if you've been around here, you know Nick. Jake, so come on up, Nick. And we're going to sit here, and we're going to have a conversation around this idea of decisions and decisions. And Sarah Sevchek is here. She is our Keep Us Honest person. And you are her Keep Us Honest people, all right? And that means that you can text messages into her, questions, comments, and she will keep track of them. Oh, do you want a phone?
Yeah.
I forgot to give that to you. That could help. And there you go. They'll show up there. So, and then the number is right up there. It's also on your Sunday paper on both the front and the back at the top. And if you're really into the Twitter, like Donna was saying, if you want to do that also, I don't think Sarah's going to be able to be picking those up, but if you want to tweet anything about it, if you use that hashtag JWDecisions, that could be kind of fun, and we could follow the conversation, or maybe you can just do it all week as you try to work around with decisions. You can also use that same hashtag on Facebook, of course. You were just going to say that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so please do. There's also a post-it note stuck to your Sunday paper, so if you would rather write something, just do that and hand it to the end of the aisle, or just pass them on down, and we'll get those to Sarah as well. So, Nick, tell us, you're the decision expert here. Nick just got back from Africa, telling Africans how to make decisions.
that's always what they want, is people from the United States come over and tell them what to do.
Yeah. So,
a lot of people don't know that's what NGOs and that's what the whole movement's about.
Good, you know? Good. I'm glad you kept our American Hebrews mm-hmm. going. Mm-hmm. Now that I've degraded our conversation. So,
killed one continent, six yeah. more to go.
Okay, so we got some music at the end of the service here, and no. So tell me, decisions. What you work with people with decisions all the time. What's this stuff all about?
Well, that's sort of a broad question.
Good.
But yeah, I mean that is actually one of the challenging parts about decisions is it's like we all talk about making decisions from the time we're, you know, basically we can learn to talk, but really what does it mean and what exactly is a decision? And so a big part of kind of figuring out how to make decisions better is really getting kind of clarity on what are we even talking about when we say making a decision. And, you know, like Greg said, I just got back from Africa, and, you know, that's like a great example. I got back and literally walked in the door 45 minutes before I was supposed to take my 7 and 6-year-old to their wrestling practice. And, you know, so I've been gone for 9 days, just walking the door. And then there's this question, and my wife asked me, you know, do you want to go? Do you want to take them? I know you just got back, et cetera. And so this tiny decision, do I take the kids to this, you know, park board wrestling practice? All of a sudden, it's like it has these layers and layers of implications and complications. Like, on the one hand, well, I'm kind of tired. I don't really feel like it. On the other hand, are they going to be disappointed? Then there's the message of, you know, what kind of message are we sending them if we don't? And are we training them to be quitters and to not be committed to things and tell them it's okay that when you don't want? And all of a sudden, this tiny little decision becomes like this, cracking the code of parenting. So that's just like, you know, one example of a decision.
What did you do?
I took him.
Okay.
Guilt got the better of me. But then of course, then we make career decisions. Should we take this job? And boy, I don't really like this job. Should I start looking for a new one? But boy, if I look for a new one, you know, it could be better, but then I'd have to give up the stability I have with this one, even though my boss is a jerk. And so we're constantly making these trade-offs. And that's really, at the end of the day, what I think making decisions is about, is the trade-offs between what we have and what we want.
Yeah, you know, and I think we all have experienced that decision burnout.
Yeah.
You know, where, life is just decision after decision after decision, and you have to kind of get good at a lot of it and find a way to just make them. Otherwise, you just get paralyzed. I remember when we moved into our house, and, you know, it was, first of all, like, deciding to buy that house just exhausted me. And then it was, well, there's nothing in there, so we needed to buy appliances, we needed to paint the walls, we needed everything. You know, it's like, what color do you want the living room? I don't care, just put paint on it. You know, it's like, I think, you know, we kind of need a way or something that helps us make these decisions, to prioritize them, and to figure out, like, what we want to make our decisions about, because we face them all the time.
Yeah, and I think a big part, you know, where, as Donna said, you know, in my seminars or anything else, I always start with the kind of making the distinction between being a person who sometimes makes decisions, like we all do, and being a decider, like actually really kind of thinking about, okay, so am I the kind of person that sort of treats every decision like an opportunity to do something with my life and move me closer to the direction that I want in whatever category this is, to becoming more of who we are. And it sounds like, okay, semantics, make decisions, be a decider. But really, at the end of the day, you know, like Greg said, we want kind of a framework to figure out how to make decisions. But the fact of the matter is, if you don't have the right mindset, this framework isn't going to do you any good. You're not going to be able to make good decisions if you approach every decision as though you're sort of a helpless pawn in the game of life, and I'm in this situation, and these events are pushing me this way, and these events are pushing me that way, and really, maybe if I just wait it out, the winds will push me into one place, and I'll call that a decision. Well, that's not really a decision, right? That's a drifting. That is letting circumstances push you, and then the next day the winds will change and circumstances will push you the other way, and over the course of days and weeks and months and years, all of a sudden you have a life that's not really yours. You don't feel like you are who you are because you haven't been making decisions. You've been letting circumstances make your decisions for you.
Sometimes they come out well, and that kind of lulls you into think, well, this is going to work.
Right,
you know, that,
right.
that worked out just fine. You know, but the idea is that, you know, how do we uniformly engage with our decisions enough that we use them according to some overarching principles that we have.
Yeah.
If you could go back to that last picture, Ryan, you've talked about this as a way of understanding deciders, and that really helps me understand the distinction. Can you just
share? So what Greg is talking about is I always use the example of my wife and I both in good times kind of liking to run. So during the summer, you might see both of us out running, and it looks like we're both runners. But on days like this, and pretty much all throughout the winter, there's a huge distinction between my wife and me, and that's I kind of like to run. So anytime there's adverse weather, inclement weather of any kind, it's not totally comfortable, I'm not running. I'm kicking my feet up and finding anything else I can do to be lazy. My wife, on the other hand, borders on insanity. She is a runner. It's like part of her identity. So even 8 months pregnant in the middle of January, she gets up at 3:45 in the morning and meets her friend and they go run. That's the difference between I kind of run and I am a runner. And I think the same thing applies to making decisions. Yeah, technically, we're all kind of decision makers, so we think. But there is a big distinction between those of us who really own it as part of our identity is we are the kind of people that take clear and decisive action, or we're the kind of people that kind of do what the mood feels like at the moment.
And just for clarification's sake, she's actually 8.9 months pregnant.
It's true. Yeah. She's 39 and a half weeks at this day.
So, yeah. Go Allison. So, you know, talking about this, it can sound like just so self-helpy. This is the kind of stuff, you know, you just, you know, Google it on the internet, how to make good decisions and stuff like that. And that's true, but I really do think this gets down to the core of who we are as people of faith, as people that try to see the world as bigger than ourselves. And you'll notice on your Sunday papers, and it's up on the screen here, but, you know, so I was just thinking about this whole decider idea, and how does that work with God? Aren't you supposed to, you're not supposed to decide, you're supposed to do what God tells you, right? And yeah, I don't think that's a good way to understand what we're talking about. Let me give you these two examples. This first one is from 1 Kings. All right, this is Solomon. All right, so David, the second king of Israel, and then his son Solomon is supposed to be the wise one who wrote the Proverbs and all that kind of stuff. So we're talking 2,700 years, no, like close to 3,000 years ago now that this was a story of him. And as Solomon is becoming king, he's very young. He's just very humbled by this. And in a dream, God asks him, he says, I'll just read it here. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask what I should give you. I wish God would ask me that. Maybe God has. And Solomon said, give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, able to discern between good and evil. And then I love this. And it pleased the Lord that Solomon asked for this. Now, I think that's really cool. I mean, what did Solomon... Well, first of all, Solomon's humility did not just ask to be rich or to be famous or to be the most powerful king ever or anything like that, but it says, I just want to be wise. I want to be able to make good decisions. And God says, that is a good thing to ask for. And what it says about us is that God says, I want you to make decisions. I don't want you just to do what I tell you. I want you to make good decisions. So another example, this is New Testament, right? So after the time of Jesus, the church is just starting to begin, and you got Paul, the guy who's taking the message of Jesus and running all over the place with it. And he writes this in Romans. He says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. You know, stretch your mind. Don't let just everybody else tell you what's going on, but figure things out. Let your mind get reshaped by God so that you may discern what is the will of God. Now, that sounds a little tricky. We're just supposed to figure out what God wants us to do, but then it goes on and it explains what the will of God is. Discern what is the will of God, what is good, what is acceptable, and what is perfect. And that word perfect in Greek is actually a more profound word. Whenever I see the word perfect, I go, ooh, because I don't think there is such a thing. But that word in Greek really means whole or complete. So the things that are good, the word is close to like virtuous. So the things that are acceptable, the things that are profound, the things that are whole. That's what God is asking us to do. And I think there's some implications there to understand that we have a God who doesn't just want to say, when I say jump, I want you to jump. But our God says, I want you to understand who I am. I want you to understand who you are in this world and what you can do. And then I want you to think very wisely about it. I think that's really fun because, you know, we have this continuum sometimes. People think about God on one side as well. You know, God either doesn't exist or really doesn't care about me and anything I do. I'm just another ant on the sidewalk. On the other extreme, you have where God plans everything, and our job is just to figure out what is God's plan for my life and not screw it up, you know? And any time I get off, then somehow I got to backtrack and get back on that original plan again. And I think the truth is somewhere in between, and that's actually on your outline, that God doesn't ask you to follow a script. God asks you to act wisely. God wants you to be a co-creator. God actually is willing to be dependent upon you and me in living out what this kingdom is like. And wherever we go with it, God says, I'll meet you there, and we're going to keep figuring this out again together.
You know, Greg, actually, so kind of to merge those two thoughts, right, of being a decider and what Greg is talking about, because that's like, okay, so what does that mean, the difference between, you know, a script and acting wisely? And I think one helpful way to think about it is like, this notion of being a decider, like The difference is, a lot of times we spend a lot of our efforts trying to make the right decision, whereas this person who's kind of fits this concept of being a decider is, yes, they'll spend time making the right decision, but they'll spend just as much time and effort making whatever decision they made right. So what I mean by that is, like, we often think that making a decision is like the final judgment, the world stops turning when we chose this path, and if things don't work out right, it was the wrong decision, I was so stupid, what was I thinking? Versus understanding that making the decision really just sets the ball in motion. And there's this other part of it, which is, you know, you decided to take this job. Was it the right decision? Maybe, maybe not. But there's many different ways it can go, even from this point. You can try and make that job better and right in different ways. You can choose to adapt to it and change some of your circumstances. Or you can look at it from kind of a helpless perspective and say, you know, I took this job. My boss sucks. Henceforth, that was a terrible decision. I shouldn't have done it. And then just throw your hands up and say, now what am I going
to
do?
Fate.
I would like to jump in at this.
Yes. Yeah.
So if we're talking about how do you make decisions and make them wisely and discerning our decisions, what happens when that gets called into question? So one comment here from someone is, I feel I generally have been able to make decisions confidently. I've had a new boss for about a year, and she seems to question many of my decisions. As a result, I found myself questioning my judgment. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's just one. That's one example that I think all of us can probably relate to, because we don't get to make decisions in a vacuum. Every decision we make has, you know, social implications, and there's people around us, whether it's our boss, our spouse, our friends, family, etc. So I don't think there's any real silver bullet to that. I think this is just one example of everyday life, that there's always people who are going to question our decisions. And I think this kind of comes back to the idea of other people can be real assets when we're making our decisions, and sometimes they can be kind of liabilities. So in this case, I would say, you know, maybe ask two questions. One, is my boss questioning my decisions because my boss is teaching me something valuable, even though I don't like it, even though I don't like the second guessing? So it's part of it, you know, kind of this humility. Maybe I'm uncomfortable because I've been doing things the wrong way, and my boss, this boss, is finally questioning me on that. So maybe there's a growth opportunity here. But the second piece is, you know, so half the other half of the equation is, maybe you just see things differently, and, you know, you do need to kind of hold your ground and understand that it's your boss's job to question your decisions because they're ultimately accountable for what you do. But maybe you just have a difference of opinion. You need to have a conversation about that. You know, that I feel like you're judging me, and maybe it's a difference of opinion. I need to understand better whether or not this is a real issue, or whether or not you're just trying to help me grow.
Can I throw a third alternative?
Sure.
What if it's just
only 50, two sides, 50%, 50%.
Oh. And this is the other 50%.
All right.
So what if your boss isn't being an asset, but just the first three letters of that word, and it's really more of a power play, and there is no, you are not, yeah, because you can count them up.
Okay.
And it isn't about being right or wrong or anything. They're just threatened by you or whoever, and you know, it's just, you're in a no-win situation.
Yeah. So good point, right? So after you do, you know, kind of the first two things, really look yourself in the mirror honestly and say, are they bringing up good points? Right? Even though I get defensive and they're attacking my self-esteem, are they bringing up good points?
And maybe ask other people.
Yeah,
to help
exactly.
You figure that out.
Exactly. Right. People who will give you an honest answer out of love. Right. So that's one thing. But there could be, at the end of the day, it is a power play, you know, and this boss just likes to lord their power over others, in which case, you know, if you've already exhausted those first two things, you could arrive at that third conclusion, and now you have another decision to make, right? I've tried everything. It's not working. This person really is a jerk. Do I need to find another job? That's a reality. My point is, sometimes we jump from A to Z too quickly. You know, I'm uncomfortable, I don't like it, I need to leave. And there's all this, you know, this area in between. There's other decisions along the way where you can test that and maybe find a different alternative. But That being said, you still might arrive at Z and then make another decision.
Other stuff like there, or something to follow up with that, or should, okay. So let me take that then to this place where about baggage, because as we try to make decisions, there's I know from my own life, I know from being involved with many of your lives, there's a lot of you that are saying, I would love just to make right decisions, but you don't know my situation. I mean, life has been tough, and I have spent maybe decades of being taught bad habits, of maybe being under emotional abuse, or you know, who knows what, or you wouldn't believe how bad my boss actually is, and it's great to say, go find another job, but I don't really know that I could find another job. So this whole baggage thing comes up, and we all have baggage, and how do you, you know, it's easy to give a glib answer to that person, but what do we do? How can we be deciders when we just really feel like we are powerless in the situation?
Yeah, well, I mean, that issue of baggage, I think, you know, I mean, part of it, it's, you know, I don't want to be glib, and I don't want to undermine or devalue real considerations, because,
you're a consultant, I mean, I thought you were allowed to.
Right. Because, yeah, I mean, some of those concerns are real, you know, but when you look at the baggage issue, I mean, the fact of the matter is we all have baggage. It takes different forms. Maybe we came from a rough home life. Maybe we came from a home life where it wasn't rough enough, and so now we're getting tossed around in the real world, and that sucks, and we're not prepared for it. You know, there's all kinds of issues, right, that all of us are facing, and I think, you know, kind of it starts with today making a decision about whether or not you're going to let that baggage bury you, or whether you're going to climb out from under it and stand on top of it. You can never get rid of it. You can never just set fire to it. But are you going to stand on top of it and use it to get you to the next level, or are you just going to let it weigh you down and always turn to it? Well, this didn't work out because my parents didn't treat me right, and, well, I wish I had this better relationship, but my parents didn't treat me right, or I wish I had this better job, but my parents didn't treat me right, or, you know, whatever the case is, right, and it's, I don't know, like I said, we all have baggage. I have it, you have it, maybe not you, you're saintly, but.
So there's a good question that came in, I think, that is getting a little bit into this, is how do we continue to learn from looking back at our past? And our past decisions or other things that have happened in our lives without dwelling on whether or not they were right or wrong?
It's a good question.
Well, you know, I would ask this question, like, does it matter whether it was right or wrong, or does it matter what you're going to do now? I mean, having a... There's the self-righteous side of me wants to say, you know, so, you know, my friend thinks I really made a bad decision, and I don't think I did, and I can spend a lot of time trying to prove that I did or I didn't, but really the question is, okay, what will I do next? I mean, it's nice to know that I was right and you were wrong, but does that actually help me make the next decision? Or does that become, are you creating baggage that's going to make that relationship, which is part of the, you know, the reality, the context you have to make the decision? Are you just adding more baggage to it? I really do think the key thing which was in that question is the learning. Like, so what did you learn? You know, and part of what you learned is that not everybody is excited about my decisions as I am. And that's a pretty important learning, you know. So what do you do with that in the future?
Yeah,
so.
There's, you know, in like behavior change literature, there's an acronym, TBU, true but useless. I think that's a good way to look at this. So who was right, who was wrong, or you know, this is the way to do it. Okay, true, but it's completely useless. It doesn't help us fix the present situation. It doesn't help us move forward. Now, there's certain things you can learn from the past, but to dwell on, you know, who is right and wrong is just counterproductive in most cases.
Go ahead.
So, kind of going along with that, we have a couple questions in here about relationships and the pain in decisions around relationships. So one of them is thinking about how do we make decisions that we think are going to hurt people that we love? And another one about how, when making decisions that are going to hurt someone that we love, how do we go about really doing that when we know we can't change another person's behavior, but we want to advocate for people we care about?
Right. So one of the things that we talk about a lot here...
We don't get these issues in business.
Yeah. Relationships?
We don't care about how the other person really feels. Just.
Yeah. One of the things we talk about a lot here is our circle of influence and circle of concern. And I think it's really important for us to understand the difference between the circle of concern is really, really big and includes all sorts of things. You know, everything from, global climate change to, how healthy my cat is. Your circle of influence are things you can actually do something about. And some of those really big concern, circle of concern things are, there's maybe some things I can do about it, but I can't just change it. I can't just directly go and affect that. You know, I can't change the way politics are done today. Are there little things within my circle of concern I can do to chip away at that? Yeah, maybe so. But the idea of not getting pulled into your circle of concern, but continuing to act and make choices within your circle of influence. And so, can you change someone else? Like, someone consistently doesn't like what I'm doing, but I don't feel like I'm making wrong choices, wrong decisions. I think to continue to interpret, like, what can I do within my circle of influence to help that person either see or to be consistent enough in what I'm doing that I start demonstrating new things about myself. I can't do that with the guarantee that the person will gradually see the logic of my ways or how wonderful I am. But that is what you can do. And I think after that, you kind of have to let it go, to coin a phrase.
Well, yeah, you know, it's like, you know, old adage, right? You can't change the other person. All you can change is how you respond to the other person. I think that's probably something good to keep in mind. As much as even out of, a deep drive and love, there's only so much you can do. If that person hasn't made the decision that they want to do something differently, there's only so much you can do.
Is there a follow-up on that, or? All right.
I think somewhat. So there's some comments here about, you know, making decisions around if it's a gut decision, and sometimes you don't know that it's the right one until years or months down the road. Mm-hmm. But going through with it anyway, and I think some of that has to do within these relationships. And there's some questions around, but what if you're just paralyzed by making a decision? So what happens when decisions seem equal and you've weighed the pros and cons and there isn't really a clear direction? How do you take the next step forward when you really can't figure out what you want to do and you're not having that sense of a gut decision?
Yeah.
Or
you
why?
So you get a coin, go. No, but I mean, honestly, I would say that's probably true in more decisions than we think. So we always, you know, Greg and I were talking about this in preparing for this. There's a tendency, it's human nature, it's called positive-negative asymmetry, which is we just tend as humans to pay more attention to the downside of things than the upside of things. It's natural, right? So when we're looking at our options, we're always going to look at what we're going to lose in this situation. And if we choose this option, what are we going to lose here? And what are we going to lose here? And so it looks like we don't really have any good options. I could do that, and that's great, but I'd have to give up this. Or I could, choose this new job, and it may pay more money, and I may have a better boss, but I'd have to lose the stability, and I don't know if I can do that to my family or whatever. So at the end of the day, there is this part where you can run through the whole decision-making process, and you really just have to make a call. There is no perfect answer. And we, a lot of times, spin our wheels searching for the right option where we don't have to make any trade-offs. And the fact of the matter is, you really just have to step up and say, I'm going to make a call, and I don't know whether this is the exact right thing, but I've done my due diligence. It's as good as any other option, so this is the path I'm going to take. And it doesn't, like I said in the beginning, it doesn't stop there. The more important decisions often are what you do after you made that decision to put yourself in this situation, to move in that direction. How do you follow that up with other decisions to manipulate the situation so that it becomes advantageous?
I think it's a myth that in most of our human sort of settings that there we could ever know enough to know for sure what the right decision was. And I think you have to start down the road and fix what you need to fix and continue learning. In fact, if on the bottom of your outlines, you're going to see this, and this is something that Nick and I talked about that I think is really clarifying as we make decisions, and that there are two really different categories of decisions. And the first one is that there are decisions that are about self-discernment, all right? That is when I don't know the right answer, all right? So I've got to discern at least what is the best answer at that point. And then below that, the other kind of decisions are what we call self-discipline issues, and that is when I don't want the right answer, you know? That is when I know what I'm supposed to do. I know I'm supposed to quit smoking, but I just really can't do it. And I think it's important to distinguish that there's some gray, there's some overlap between those, but basically we have these two different kinds of situations, and there are different ways of dealing with them. There's some Bible verses there that I think it's just amazing that the Bible speaks to these very, very clearly, and I'm not going to go through that. You can look at it yourself. But there's some steps. You know, I think pretty much what these questions are going after, Sevcek, were these self-discernment issues. And Nick, can you just kind of walk us through these steps that you...
So first of all, not to overcomplicate it, but I want to go back to that issue of like, because you mentioned something, Sarah, about instinct, or instinct is or isn't telling us what to do. So even in the discernment issues, there's really like two strands of research about discernment issues. And one is decisions where there is a right answer and decisions where there's a right opinion. And so for instance, and you approach them in different ways. So when you're making a decision that's purely an opinion, like, do I like this piece of art? Do I like this movie? Do I like this TV show? Do I like this person? Those are really opinion decisions. There isn't an objective right answer. And what the research shows is in those cases, it's best to just go with your instinct. You will actually be more satisfied if you trust your instinct in those cases. Now, there's other ones where maybe it's like, it's a complicated, you know, investment decision. And you know what you want to do, but boy, there's all these different factors. That there maybe is a right answer, and it's best not to trust your instinct, but to actually do your research, find the right people. But it's really helpful to kind of distinguish between which kind of choice the discernment is.
So how do you decide which kind of decision?
Right. Well, I'm glad you brought it up.
we're running short on time.
Yeah.
But, and I can see you've just got... I'm scribbling down stuff like crazy, so you probably have... We will post everything up on Facebook later so people can see the rest of the questions, and Nick will respond to them all personally.
So I'll go quick through the self-discernment steps, like Greg said, and then I think we should get some questions. So, you know, the first step in any case is determining, you know, what is the goal? And that sounds like so trite and so basic, but you'd be shocked at how many times you unconsciously never think about that question. You know, or we write it off as too basic. Like, you know, where do we send our kids to school? Well, of course, we want them to get the best education. What does that mean? Like, what really do you want? When you say best education, do you want them to learn how to do math problems really well, to become a well-rounded person? How does this fit into, you know, the overall scheme of your life? Like, you need to step back and figure that out. Like, what is the purpose of sending them to school other than just getting them a degree, right? What do you want for them, for yourselves, out of that question? So that's the goal. Then what are your options? Kind of laying out what could you do and get creative. And one of the key things here is you by yourself, because you're limited to your frame of reference, no matter how smart you are or think you are, you can only see this part of the equation. The best thing you can do to find the best options is to ask other people, because they're coming at it from a different perspective, and their judgment isn't clouded by emotions being emotionally attached to the situation. So they're going to bring in naturally new options that you probably hadn't considered. So that's really kind of the key of inviting other people into the options phase. And then lastly,
that's kind of on your outlines, the objectively evaluate those options.
Yeah.
And I think something when we talked earlier is realizing that none of those options are going to be perfect, probably.
Right.
So just let that go at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, comes back to being a decider. Almost inevitably, after you've figured out what the goal is and you're crystal clear on that, you've asked the smartest people you know what they think, you're still going to arrive at about three pretty good options. And then what do? Right? And you simply just have to keep in mind that this is the first step, right? There is no right answer at this moment. Any three could be right. It's what you do after you make the decision for the months and years to come that are probably going to make this decision right or wrong. So that's it. So that's the basic process.
on the self-discipline issues, I think the steps are a little bit different. And that is, so that's when you know the right thing to do, but you're really having a hard time following through on it. I know that I want to be more loving to my wife, but we have all these triggers going on that just keep building in these bad habits, or, you know, whatever those kinds of situations might happen to be. Again, this, what is the goal, you know, that you're facing and trying to be consistent and stick with your decision? I think the why is really important on these, because understanding why you want to do this gives you helps reorient you as well. The next thing is, what's keeping you from your decision? You know, what are the internal things, the habits, the behaviors, the biases, whatever, that are always tripping you up? And then what are the external things? What situational things that maybe aren't under your control on their own, but they're also always, you know, sabotaging you from being able to do what you want to do, the situational
I want to say one thing real quick there about the situational thing. One of the things that's abundantly clear from decision research on this discipline issue is most issues of self-discipline, you can't mind over matter them, right? So just, I'm going to try really hard
to quit drinking.
Yeah, to quit drinking, to quit smoking, to, you know, to stay faithful or whatever it is. So much of it depends on the situation, right? So you have to take a good look at your situation, and that includes people, environmental triggers, things that are around you, that when you're in this situation, you're almost, it's almost too late. Right? The situation will always win if it's a willpower issue. So if you put yourself in the situation, don't expect that you're going to be able to, you know, go to the bar and not drink. Right, you just can't go to the bar, and that applies to just about every self-discipline issue you can think of. So, just a sidebar there.
Well, and I think that fits the next piece is replace all the negatives that you're dropping, the things you don't want to do, the things that are tripping you up. Don't just not do them. Replace them with something else. We were talking about this in the office, and Melissa's language around this was, "You need to write a new story." You know, and that is like, what's the vision for yourself? Who would you be if you did things differently? And adopt that story. Say, this is the person I want to be, and I have a vision towards that, and I understand what that person would do. And I think if you just say, well, I'm not going to do these things, I'm not going to hang out with those friends, and I'm not going to, when I'm nervous, I'm not going to pick up a cigarette to have like a very concrete thing. What are you going to do? Because if you don't find something else, you're going to pick up the cigarette. You know, if you don't have a different way of understanding what you want to do with that person, when that trigger fires that always makes you angry, you're going to get angry. You know, so what are you going to do? How are you going to replace it? Then the last piece is what we need to do together on these self-discipline issues. You don't do this alone. You do this. This is why we're community. This is why we get together. You need support, and that's for encouragement and for accountability. We can help each other do this stuff, and really, life needs to happen together, and that's just, I think, real basic about it. So that was real fast and all that. We need to move on, but can you just, like, read us some of the stuff that we realize we haven't even touched yet.
So read exactly what people are writing.
I trust your judgment on that.
Well, if I could do something a little different. I think this word isn't being used in a lot of these comments, but I think an overarching theme is fear. Mm. And the questions are, I think, around the fear of what happens once decisions are made. So part of the conversation you've been having is how to make those decisions. And I think there's a lot of questions here around, but what if we don't know what's going to happen from that decision?
Right.
And the fear, and I think that's where some of this paralysis is coming from, and how to address that fear.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll take that a step further and say, you never know what's going to happen. Not sometimes. In this decision, I don't know. You never know, right? So that's what makes decisions hard, is they're always a step into the unknown. It's always, you know, your best guess about how I'm going to relate to an unknown future. And that's what makes them challenging. Again, I'll go back to this issue of the decider thing, right? That's what makes it, that's why this mindset matters, because at the end of the day, always you're going to be battling this fear. I wish there was a silver bullet for that. I think one of the ways in which you can kind of alleviate some of the fear is by using a process that you trust, right? So you'll feel more confident and more able to cope with the fear if you feel like you've gone through the appropriate steps to arrive at this place. But if you get there, you know, it's kind of like If you've studied hard for the test, you're more confident even when you find an answer that you don't know on the day. But when you know you slacked off and you forgot to study, and then you show up and you find a question, like immediately you start sweating and your face turns red because you know you're not prepared. And I think the same can be applied to using a process versus not using a process. One way I know this is reliable and it's going to at least point me in a general right direction, even if it's not exactly what I wanted, or if I just arrive at the situation willy-nilly, it's going to be scary.
So this is the consultant, saying, no, use your process. And here's the pastor saying...
Not your process, my process.
Yeah. Which for $15.95 at 1-800... No.
Act now.
And he will throw in. No, so here's the pastor saying, it's not just know your process or use your process, it's the pastor saying use your people. You're going to be scared. You do not know. One of the things I learned long ago is that decisions mean change. Change means loss of something, right? Because you change something. Loss means pain. We always feel pain when we go through loss. So decisions trigger pain, fear, that kind of stuff. Just know it's there. Trust your people. Use your people. Both for judgment, to be part of the process, but also just to help you walk through it. Don't try to do it by yourself. And I think you're, much more likely to be able to do a healthy, make some healthy decisions that you can say that they don't all have to be right, but I can live with this and I can continue to make decisions faithful to what my life ought to be about.
So I guess one other piece there, not to, not to be too glum, but. The other reality is if you're too afraid to make this decision, there should be another fear in the back of your mind that if you don't make this decision, it's going to get made for you.
Things are
going to change, and you're going to lose, and it's going to be painful even if you don't make the decision. So it's up to you whether or not you want to kind of outsource the decision to an environment that you have no control over.
Yeah, create a new future. So I want to make one last little piece here, and we will put up the rest of these questions and hope this conversation keep going on all week and certainly in your group life this week as well. But here at Jake's Oil, we talk a lot about rope, and rope is how we grow. It's a way of picturing how life works, and there it's three strands. There's the self. You are always, and this is on your outlines, you are always the decider. You make decisions, okay? And it has to be you. It needs to start with you because you're the one who's just asking the question, what should I do? It starts with you. But then your decisions, if you just say, well, this is what I like, or this is what I want, and I'm going to make decisions that way, it can become either, it can be very hedonistic, which is all about me. And it isn't that way. I think we believe that. It's the second strand that we weave our lives together with are others. And that's not just others as in my family or my neighbors or my coworkers, but it's also like the planet. So how does my decision affect others? I have a responsibility and an opportunity to make my decision not just work for me, but work for the larger community. Then the last strand, broadened, that's the word broadened. God, I can broaden my decision to include others. Then the last piece is God, is that, and God takes that decision which we were driving forward with that we made and our others that brought it, and God deepens it because God knows us better than we know ourselves. God understands how the world works and how we fit into the this larger economy of humanity and of creation and can give us those sorts of insights. So God makes those decisions deeper and bigger. Every decision when we seek to do that way is weaving our rope and helping us grow and make a life that is stronger and better and more beneficial. And, you can unweave things sometimes. There's always more weaving to be done on that rope. And so I encourage us to be thinking about it that way. And, so I thank Sevcek and Nick. Thanks for being here. Feel free to continue firing those questions away. We'll post these, like I said. And at this point, I want to close this with a prayer, but also let you know that there's offering baskets here. So. If you can put your communication cards in there and any questions you didn't get to that you wanted to throw out yet, throw those in there as well. And if you're new here, your presence with us is your gift. We thank you for being here. If this is your home, we rely on what you share with us in order to continue to make our ministry be what God has called it to be and to make it happen. So thank you for doing that. Let's pray. You can pass those on and I'll just close this out. God, We do. We've got to make these decisions. And every one of us is facing some real ones right now. And some of them really hurt. Some of them really hard. Some of them aren't just difficult, but they really go to the core of what it's all about. I pray that you be with us as we are deciders, so that we aren't doing this as in a vacuum. Help us to realize that you have given us community. You've given us one another to figure out what to do next, to do that step of discernment, but also to give us peace, to give us hope, and to give us better decisions next time. So be with us. Thank you for your love. Thank you for forgiveness. Thank you for chances to start again. And thank you for this next song. Amen.